If you like reading novels about technology, science, and the future, then chances are there's more than one 1,000-page Neal Stephenson novel on your bookshelf. Stephenson's the author of Cryptonomicon, a book often described as the ultimate geek novel. He wrote the 3-volume historical epic, The Baroque Cycle, and now he's moved into the fast-paced world of hyper-gaming in a thriller called Rimdi. Steve Paulson asked Stephenson if he's a gamer himself.
I wouldn't say I'm a big gamer because, by modern standards, I'm a complete loser. I've put a fair bit of time into playing games like Halo and online role-playing games, but I tend to play them in solo mode, just without being connected to the internet. So my opponents in these games are just a computer program. That is for the absolute weaklings of the gaming world. The people who know what they're doing don't bother with that. They go straight to competing against other human beings over the network, and that embodies a much higher level of competition and skill.
Like my 13-year-old son, who plays so fast that when I watch, I can't even see who he's killing before that character's already gone.
Yeah, I tried playing Halo once against some people about that age, and I wasn't particularly surprised or bothered by the fact that I was just getting instantly killed all the time, because I kind of expected it would be that way. But what really troubled me was that I never knew who had done it, where they were, or how they had done it.
Yeah, it sounds familiar. Now, this online game that you've created in your novel would seem to have an extra dimension to it. Some people get involved not just for fun, but because they can make a lot of money.
This is one of these things that makes science fiction writers just want to give up, because it's one of these real-world events that science fiction writers never would have dared to predict. But in these games, there are objects of value, virtual property, like a magic sword or a magic helmet, that confer greater power in the game world. By and large, those kinds of things can be purchased in a sort of market within the game world. It can take a lot of work, a lot of time, to kill enough monsters to get all the gold pieces that you need to pay for the magic sword you've been lusting after. And so there is a class of people called gold farmers or gold miners, typically in China, although they're in a lot of other places as well, who just sit all day long and play these games and accumulate gold. They will then sell that virtual gold in the game world to people, typically in the West, in exchange for actual currency, actual hard money.
And you're saying this happens in the real world. I mean, this is not just in your novel.
Yeah, it's been happening for a long time. It's been very well covered by this point. And in fact, just since I finished the book, a story came out saying that there are prisons in China where some of the prisoners have been put to work essentially as slave labor doing this gold mining or gold farming in order to line the pockets of the people who run the prison.
Wow. I mean, that's fascinating, because, of course, then your novel goes into the underworld, and the Russian mob gets involved in this, and sort of there is this weird intersection between computer hackers and the criminal element.
Yeah. The other element that I mixed in was a young virus writer he's one of these gold miners in China, and he gets the idea to write a virus that's going to get him more money faster. This is an idea that's been rattling around in my head again for something like 10 years. So there was a time a few years ago when every so often we'd hear a story of some kid in the Philippines or some other place who would write a virus that in a matter of hours or days would sweep all across the world and inflict huge amounts of damage on people's computer systems. And these people, in a way, became sort of like picaresque heroes. I mean, nobody wanted to admit that they admired what these kids were doing, but in a way, it's amazing and cool that a poor, anonymous, smarty-pants kid living in a big city in Asia can have that much of an effect on the world just with something he made up.
Well, if you take off your fiction hat for a moment and just sort of think about the world that we live in now, because I mean, you obviously do this. I mean, you track developments, you track the state of technology. Does it seem like something new is happening now? Something fundamentally new that's sort of different than the world that people lived in, I don't know, 40 years ago?
Well, something new is always happening, and the pace of change often feels like it's accelerating quite a bit. And obviously, the big thing of the last decade or two has been the internet, mobile devices. Just going back several decades, the thrillers that I most admired when I was younger were Alistair MacLean's books. He wrote these really good action thrillers that had characters in them that were of, you know, a certain amount of literary quality. In a way, I was kind of trying to emulate those books when I started this one. But because of these changes, a lot of the plot devices and kind of stock situations that you used to see in thrillers simply can't be used anymore. When everybody can use Google Maps to figure out where they are, when everybody can look stuff up on Wikipedia, when people can use cell phones to call for help, when everything is being captured on security cameras. And so that changes the clock quite a bit. It sort of gives you a different set of laws of physics that have to be taken into account if you're trying to plot out an action thriller.
Well, and it's so interesting to hear you say that because, of course, your previous novel, Anathem, dealt with time in a big way, and part of that was the idea of monastic time, sort of eternal time that was very cut off from the secular world, from sort of more ordinary prosaic time. And I guess it makes me wonder if which world you like to live in more, sort of this hyper-fast time, or do you sort of yearn for slower time?
I'd like to have a choice. I think it would be nice if every city had a sort of monastery in the middle of it, not a religious monastery and not the kind of monastery where you weren't allowed to leave, but just a place where it was quiet, there was no internet connection, no cell phone, no mobile devices, and you could just go there and spend a day or a week or a month just getting done the kinds of things that require sustained, focused attention on a particular project. Then when you were done, you could walk outside again and check your email.
Neal Stephenson is the author of Cryptonomicon, The Baroque Cycle, Anathem, and his most recent novel, Rimdi. He spoke with Steve Paulson.